Coach, you spent 37, 38 years in the coaching business. Did I miss that number?
Well, that's pretty close. When you count high school and the whole nine yards, it's about 43.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a lot of third and one.
No doubt. Coach, we want to talk about Derek Thomas because okay. He's such a great player and no doubt an asset to the Crimson Tide family. Help us understand your relationship with him as a player and sort of the development of a guy like Derek Thomas.
Well, I was fortunate to be with Derek his freshman year. And I remember him coming in and how excited the staff was about, you know, his ability. Sylvester Croom was working with the outside linebackers at that time, and Sly was just bubbling at his athletic ability, his unique ability to rush the passer. And some people can make their bodies, Wilbur Marshall, several people with that style of body can literally be going one way, and then Derek could be going almost the opposite direction in the next move, you know. And he was awfully, awfully hard to block off the edge. And the thing that was so exciting, though, was how bright-eyed and how eager he was to learn and how much he put into practice and into the game. So he came in ready to play.
So when you see Derek Thomas, do you realize as a coach, and I'm sure you've done this before with many other great players, do you just see something different in knowing that they're going to be a superstar one day? Do you just see something different in a guy like Derek Thomas?
Well, I went to a horse auction one time with a guy who walked through, and there was about 50 horses there, and they all looked the same to me. And he said, that one and that one. And I said, well, how do you know? And he said, because of the lines and how they carry themselves. And, you know, some athletes, you can tell right from the beginning. I remember the first really scrimmage we had when D'Amico Ryan was here with us. And after that practice, they said, well, just sum it up real quick, your group, you know. And I said, well, I tell you this, D'Amico will be the next really great linebacker. And because he just had that mark about him, and Derek had that even in spades early. He was the first game, he and Cornelius were on opposite sides in practice going into the Ohio State game, and then Cornelius pulled a muscle, I forget whether it's groin or what, but he pulled up right before the Ohio State game, so he didn't get to play. So the first game Derek ever dressed out in as a freshman, he started and played well against a really good Ohio State team, and just, you know, so the learning curve was really short. It wasn't a deal where he came in and sat down a while to, you know, to learn the game. He came in and played the very first game he was here.
How would you line up, and I know you probably saw different ways and very few of them work, but as you looked at opposing offenses, how did they slow down Bennett, Derek Thomas, and also Keith McCants was a part of that linebacker core as well?
Right. You know, most offenses with a good edge rusher, they'll try to chip him off with a help with a back, you know, and end up doubling him with a tackle in the back. And there are a lot of different ways, you know, to do that. Slide to him, and usually, though, it involved helping the tackle in some way, shape, or form. And again, I was talking before, the thing that made Derek so different was the ability to bend his body, I mean, and still be running, you know, flat out. He didn't have to slow down to make a move or a turn. He played lights out as soon as the ball was snapped, and just had a great knack for rushing the passer.
You've coached a lot of different places in college football. Do you believe that he deserves to be in the College Football Hall of Fame?
Certainly. I tell you what, it's amazing in life. You wonder sometimes, you know, how life gets cut short by some. We know for some people, and Derek was certainly a guy that, you know, if he were around today, we'd be so humble and so proud of this honor. And no telling what he would have done between the interim there, you know. So life deals you a crazy hand sometimes, but it's very fitting and very deserving that Derek be honored in this way.
Coach Kynes, do you take a sense of pride as you look at players? You look at D'Amico Ryans, a guy that you talked about a couple of minutes ago. But in your coaching stops, you were part of so many great players. As someone that sort of early on helped people develop not only as football players but as people, do you take a sense of pride when these guys are recognized for their achievements on the field?
Oh, yeah, but not pride in the fact that I contributed much to them. Just pride in the fact that somebody recognizes that, listen, this guy was special. You know, those real special ones, the main thing is don't mess them up. You know, don't mess them up. Don't overburden them with a lot of useless things. You know, I mean, he had Derek, Cornelius, Wilbur, all those guys had a great sense of how to do what they were supposed to do. And I don't know if they actually knew what caused them to do that. When the game started and the thing got going 100 miles an hour, they just had that innate ability to be in the right place and to play the game. You know, you find a lot of people that have, you know, some ability to do this and that, but during the game, that ability kind of gets lost and caught up in the excitement of the game. But those guys did, you know, it was very simple and very easy for them to do what they were supposed to do. But to answer your question, you know, there are so many. God bless me in so many ways to be around not only great players but just great people. And Derek certainly was one of those that. Again, if he were here right now, you know, he'd be so humble about it. It wouldn't be, you know, he'd give all the credit to somebody else. And that's usually the way the really great ones are.
Did you have to, in looking back, and this is not just a question for Derek Thomas, but a Cornelius Bennett or a Keith, I mean, any of the guys that you've coached in your 43 years, do you have to coach the great players different? And I know you talked about their skill level. But is there a different way that you manage guys
you know
that are so great?
The first thing you do is you don't separate them out. You know, they're on the it's a team sport. So they never wanted any quarter. They never wanted, you know, Cornelius, Derek, all those guys were as good in practice as they were in the game. You know, they just wanted to get better. They just had fun playing the game. You didn't have to make them practice. They had that sense of urgency every day that, hey, once you got the pads on, got on the field, it wasn't any different than how they approached the game and how they approached practice. They were just trying to get better every day. And so, you know, it was always a pleasure to work with those guys. You never, you know, you didn't have to beg them to work. You know, those kind of guys came to work. I remember one day, early in the week on a Tuesday, we'd put in a new blitz and we'd run it three or four times and gotten it wrong three or four times. And Cornelius just said, time out. And I thought, well, this is practice. You really don't call time out. But Cornelius said, time out, coach. And he turned to the huddle and he said, listen, guys, if we have to run this again, I'm going to whip every one of you. And they knew two things. One, he could, and two, he would. And so we never had to run that again. You know, they just... Those guys understood the urgency of doing things right, and I don't know, it's a treat when you get one like that.
Coach, as you look back at your coaching career, a lot of that was in the Southeastern Conference. No doubt seven in a row national champions have started in this conference. Go back and think about, could you have ever imagined that the SEC would be this dominant in college football and the popularity of Southeastern Conference football is now a national brand?
Well, you know, that's a credit and all to the coaches now. You know, Alabama staff probably the best in the country right now from top to bottom. And the rest of the league, if you can coach and play in the SEC, you can coach and play anywhere in the world. it's just different. In the SEC, it's every Saturday you went on the field knowing if we don't play the very best we can, we could get beat. And it's not that way everywhere, but I think the SEC certainly has earned the right to be considered, you know, among the best. And right now, that's where it is. It may circle back and circle somewhere else, you know, in another decade. But right now, it's always important that you remember that we live in the now. You know, it doesn't matter what used to be or what could be or what's going to be. Right now, football in the SEC is about as good as it is anywhere in the world.
Coach, what makes this coaching staff the best in the country?
You know, I think it starts at the top and comes down. You know, Coach Moore did a great job in bringing Coach Saban here, and then he's done a magnificent job with the staff and with the players. And it never takes anything for granted. You know, never satisfied, always working, always looking for a way to get better, and never being complacent, never taking things for granted. You know, sometimes I wonder why, you know, why. I saw two doctors one time operating on a boy, and I thought, you know, that's the same intensity that Coach Saban coaches with. And so it doesn't matter if you're coaching or you're a physician or if you're, you know, a car salesman. If you're going to do things right, you're going to do things it's going to mean something to you. You approach it like it's important. There's a lot of folks go to work every day just wishing they didn't have to go. And then, you know, there's people that can't wait to get out of bed to get to the job, and there's some excitement in it. I know a dentist that if you listen to him, you'd think dentistry was the greatest thing in the world, you know, working with patients every day. So it's not only just in coaching. I think when you're striving for excellence, it's the same. But we certainly got a staff here that excellence is not just some phrase. It's literally a way of life.
Coach, I read a lot of things on the Internet. Some are true, some are not true. I'm reading a story that you were born in the back of a train car. Is there truth to that?
Well, there's some truth in it.
Okay.
My father was a prisoner of war. He was in a German prison camp. My mother was going from Cedartown, Georgia to Piedmont on a train. And once we got to bouncing around on that train, I think the process started. I've heard, of course, I don't remember it, but I've heard several versions of it where I got to the, you know, mother got to the house, and the one thing for sure, the first thing I ever had on was a white shirt with a collar and the sleeves cut out of it. But we're on that train. There was a train involved, but I really don't think I was born on a train.
Okay. You never know what to believe on the Internet, Coach.
That's right, you know. And the first time I ever heard that story, seriously, I was just a child, and my mother was ironing. And I was sitting in the floor playing, and she was trying to find something to occupy me. So she started telling me, you know, about all of that. So I don't know. I've heard it all my life, and my uncles and this and that and the other. It's gotten blown up and out of proportion. There's some of it true, but I wasn't born on a boxcar. You can rest assured of that.
Coach, final question. We look at your coaching days. You've always tried to do a good job of implementing your faith. You've talked about that so much. I know you visit around throughout Tuscaloosa and throughout the state of Alabama, sharing your testimony. Can you take just a minute and talk about how important your faith is to you?
You know, first of all, God was so good to me. I was blessed beyond my wildest dreams, you know, with the opportunities I got in coaching. And for me to think I had a lot to do with that would be ridiculous, you know. And I always loved it. I always loved the kids, and couldn't wait to get to work in the morning. But, you know, when it all comes down to it, when we stand before God, I don't think he's going to pay any attention at all to how many we won or how many we lost. I think it's going to come down to what we put into it. and how we treated the coaches we worked with and the players we coached and the players that we played against, you know. So I think all those things go into making it a real living situation, you know. It's some people, I never thought that it was playing church, you know. I just went to work every day, tried to do the best I could. And listen, when I worked with Coach Bowden, the thing I was always impressed with him, you know, he never let those kids go for spring break or a long weekend. He didn't pull them up and pray for their safety. And when he talked to them and to the team and when he prayed, it all sounded the same. You know, when he talked to God, it was like he was talking to his best friend. And when it gets right down to it, that's probably what this is all about anyway.
Well, Coach, I don't know if we could have said it any better. Coach Kynes, no doubt, a big part of the Crimson Tide family, loved for his style of coaching, and no doubt we've enjoyed this conversation. Coach Kynes, thanks so much for spending a couple of minutes with me talking about Derek Thomas and possibility of the induction tomorrow in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Well, he certainly deserves it, and I appreciate you letting me share it with you.